Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Okay, everybody, happy Monday. We made it to a new week, thanking God for the day of being here. I want to thank every one of you who have brought up our listener count to 20,040 people. I don't know where you're coming from, but I do thank all of you for the support and for the continuous listenership. So I want to say a special thank you to Professor Carlton Jones and his What About Us project that is our official sponsors for tonight's segment. He also was here Friday for part one of this discussion. So I want to say thanks to him because he's offered so much to our discussions about black empowerment and all of the struggles that we face and helping us to understand where a lot of it comes from. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio, currently with isoradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., and again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is Grace in New York with the best of R&B events in the best of venues. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, Monster Miles, DJ Domrek, Rodney Williams, and to our active panelists, Deacon Zeddy Williams of Toledo, Ohio. Without you guys, this mission and this show would be nothing. To Salo Jenkins, Al-Tariq Atkins, Hakeem Zayed Bey, and to my On the Edge Listeners Lounge, you guys have been awesome. Thank you very much for all that you contribute, both on and off the air, for all that you have given in the pre-broadcast topic discussion questions. Thank you very much. To my other social media supporters, the Black Love and Conversations group with Linda Miller, Real World Black News and Discussion groups, and the Black History Suppressed group with Mr. Mark, and to the Capitalist N Group with Marvin Young, thank you all very much for all that you have given. All right, tonight we are continuing part two of our discussion on Black Leaders, Wherefore Art Thou? We are discussing the state of the Black communities today and what the role of the absentee of leadership for people that we have either voted in or have become an icon of some sort that allows for a platform for black issues to be addressed to the masses, and how some of them don't use their power for empowerment, even though they come off the struggle with the success that they've obtained, came from us, how some of them are actually elected political leaders that have deeply failed in their positions and in their roles, in the positions that they have, either via scandal, via just straight abandonment, via going out there and self-profiting businesses off of this, in their position and off of our struggle. All of these things are factors in tonight's topic. I want to say happy birthday to another one of our active panelists, Mr. Patrick Irvine, who have been an intricate part of contributions to what we do on and off the air. So happy birthday, Patrick. We are laughing, saying that he will be the next president, but it's not really a joking manner. He can do it. All right. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be going out with our pre-broadcast song by the Bee Gees, classic, Staying Alive, because that's what our black community is trying to do. Be back right after this.
Yeah.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with K.D. Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. K.D. and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with K.D. Barnett and friends. I'm your host, K.D. Barnett. We are going to be going into our second part discussion of Black Leaders, Wherefore Art Thou? That is the name of tonight's segment. This is part two. Special thank you once again to Professor Carl Tone Jones for his sponsorship for tonight's segment and his What About Us project. He has definitely been making some moves, some relevant, important, and progressive moves, I must say, with the youth out there especially, but with our Black communities on the whole. The things that we are discussing and have been discussing, and it was very, very intense on Friday night. I want to thank all of you that joined in and helped to share your thoughts and your views and your solutions, because that's what it has to be. After we speak about it, what do we do about it? We are tired. Many of us are tired of all of the things that we are seeing happen. We're seeing our young Black men, be it young children who can't be called young men yet, but we say young men as some term of endearment, constantly be shot down literally or otherwise. We're seeing that every single person that we have in a place of power, we know the deal, they're going to be shot down or brought down by some smear campaign or some physical bullet or something to that effect is going to happen. And more of us keep rising, and those of us that don't come in learning and armed with the mistakes of the last person and figuring out how we get around what took place or learning from the failures or the where they stopped at, we come in half-cocked and we shut down again. Then more people are wanting things to happen, but nothing is being done because nobody actually wants to make the first move. But yet, if there is a move made, we don't support each other enough to the point where we keep going until something happens. Well, what happens when those of us that are just civilians, those of us that are just average Janes and Joes, go out there and we want something, we want to change, but we don't have the power or we don't have the understanding as to where to go? Well, we elect leaders. And when it's not a leader by political seat, let's talk about the people that we put into power by supporting them. For example, Jay-Z. For example, all other Black rappers and artists, all other entertainers that we support by buying the paraphernalia, the ticket sales, the merchandise, the footwear, all of these things that tell them, without us, you'd be nothing. But then we sit back and we take it when not any of these people turn around and say, thank you for what you've done because of where we're at and where we came from and how we got here. We're going to take what we have and go to where it counts and make sure that for you putting me here, we're going to make sure we get you guys something. Then we have people like Tommy Sotomayor, okay? Tommy Harris, I believe his real name is, trying their best to suck up the black struggle because that's the only way that they'll make a mark in the door somewhere, but yet turn around and speak on the angle of a troll or an agent or an insider from the other side who sits there and fuels the fire of internal hatred, which Lord knows the only way that you can actually conquer a huge army is to have them fight themselves. So what do? We have all of these people who are in power, all of our leaders, and when I say leaders, I'm not just speaking about congressmen. Speaking of that, let's speak about how are the people that are in these actual governmental or political situations for us representing us, quote, unquote. They're absent by scandal, meaning they're too busy not focusing on the importance of their position and keeping their eyes on the prize and on the job that they need to do because they're so busy getting sucked up with the power or the perception of it that they wind up creating these side businesses that is definitely are illegal, period. But then to be a black person committing these illegal acts, you're under scrutiny a lot more. You're definitely going to be twice as quickly exposed and twice as harshly punished. So once that happens, now you've given them all the excuse in the world to remove you from a place they never wanted you in the first place. So once again, your home team has taken a kick. So absence by scandal, either something sexual, something political, some white-collar crime, some sort of Ponzi scheme. All of our leaders that are in the churches are involved with some sort of money scheme. If they're not doing that, they're running off to abandon the physical doors of the church so they can open the virtual ones on TV. All of our teachers standing back and taking the fact that some of these people that really want to make a difference can't make the difference. But they're all sitting around and no one's opening their mouth to say, your curriculum is ridiculously unfair. You know it's illegal for you to sit there and give a kindergarten or a college grade work and mandate that they meet the standards or be demoted or be left back. That's another thing. Then we have our community leaders who show up and petition all day long the week before primaries, know your name, in tune with what you personally know. And once they're in office, all those things go out the window. But now take the leaders to the side and let's talk about the leaders who are not so famous, the ones that are the most important. But however, they don't have a title, a seat, a photo op, a 15-minute claim to fame. But they're the most important people in the community, and that's the leaders of our community, our families, our households, the parents. The parents, the black men who are supposed to father their children and lead their wives and lead their families, the women who are supposed to be being mothers but are dealing with single motherhood or trying to be their kids' friends. So all of you leaders are failing, but our big mouthpiece, the politicals, the ones that's in the articles, the ones that you see plastered all over every news feed and TV broadcast, the one you hear on everybody's radio show, the ones that you see at every big-time, high-profile case, where the hell are you? While an 8-year-old boy coming out of a daycare center with an iPad in his hand, only 2 steps behind his aunt, got punched in the face by a white man that got away after his 61st arrest. He got released yet again. Where are you when our children are in school being forced, being suspended, or they're being forced to be left back because they're given work that doesn't belong to them, is not in their place, but yet everybody's letting this happen? Where is the outrage about things like Trayvon and Jordan Davis and Jonathan Farrell? Where's the outrage and the continuous stance until some justice and change happens coming from all of you that will be there in a minute when the high-profile prosecutor of a high-profile murder case will give you your 15 minutes of fame? That is the question that's on the table tonight. I have a panelist coming in. And I would like to hear what all of you have to say. The number here to your new callers are 347-327-9967. Please give us a call. Press 1 if you want to speak, and we will be happy to hear what you have to say. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and God bless you and your family.
Thank you, sir. Back at you, and welcome, Deacon. What is your take on tonight's situation?
It's really scary the way things are. I was looking at and I was scrolling through my computer, and I ran across this post that was posted, and there were a bunch of white people sitting at the table, and it were being served by black servants, and they were having a discussion about how they can infiltrate the black community. And that was, well, we'll keep an eye out for the smart ones, the ones that want to be stand-up leaders in their community, and we'll watch them, we'll bring them on in, and we'll let them get a little power under their belt and, you know, feed it to them, and then eventually they'll wind up just like us, and then we'll have them out the way. So this way, if we remove them, we don't have to worry about an uprise from those other folks. So if you look at the way things are in today's society, that is actually happening. Don't you know you have the enemy that sits around plotting every day while we're distracted by little small things that don't mean anything, and we're missing the whole picture when we should be coming together as a group of people, powerful people that we are, and it seems like a lot of us are missing the boat. But we need to some of us need to stop walking around with our eyes wide shut and start waking up. And I say this all the time, but and I'm starting to sound like a tape recorder, but that's okay. I don't mind hearing myself repeat myself over and over again, because I'll continue it until somebody else gets it. And I know that there's a saying that where one or two are gathered, I will be in the midst of you. So what we have to do as far as the community, stop letting these plastic so-called leaders that are in place right now, we're relying on them. We can raise up new and more powerful leaders and real leaders to get up there and do what needs to be done. And the only way we're going to do that is working together.
Absolutely. Panelists, I see you there. Just give me a couple of seconds. One of the things that was brought up on Friday by our amazing professor was a statement that sticks with me often, and it is definitely an accurate one, and that is that our society, for some reason, always tends to look for that Superman. And while I understand, listen, a couple of people in the pre-broadcast discussion today mentioned a common factor or a common belief, and that is, we all need leadership. We do need a leader. We need to act a leader, because you know too many chefs can't be in the same soup, you know, without the kitchen. So the same thing that you may be cooking from one place, everybody has different views and ideas, and if everybody is given the freedom to go ahead with what they want, it'll become a brawl. You do need one person to hear from all sides and try to come to a middle ground that satisfies everybody to a point, or that is actually the common ground or the better for the greater good. However, we do tend to sit back and grumble and grumble and grumble. And while we're grumbling, we're continuously chipping away at each other, not the outsiders. Be it fear, be it preconditioning from our ancestors, be it lack of knowledge, be it lack of understanding, okay, be it so much frustration that we're blinded by the rage of our own frustration and hopelessness, and to a point that nobody is saying, you know what, I'm too tired of being tired. So let me get up and let's see what little I can do. And if it starts with doing it for you now and you realize it's working for you, then take that knowledge and move it on to someone else who could do it their way in their space. This is one of the things that took place. Everyone speaks about Malcolm. Everyone speaks about Martin Luther King. They achieved great things, but they came from great struggles, and they started with little things.
Right.
We know Malcolm was a hothead.
Right.
No.
But you know, they were go getters, and they weren't people that were just running their mouths. They were getting up, and they were taking action. And you have a lot of the people that are here in society today, they just want to run their mouth, but they're not action people. They need to start to get a fire lit up underneath them, because even with some of the Christians or faith believers, you know, they're always saying, well, let's pray on this and let's pray on this. Let's believe in God for this. Okay, yeah, that's true enough. You have to pray and you have to rely on God for things. But you're missing the point. The whole point is God will provide you with the tools. He doesn't want you sitting on your behind and doing nothing, because if he does it all for you, what the hell are we going to be, a bunch of wimps and a bunch of people that have people waiting on God to just reach out and create a miracle? No, you have to put in some work also. You know, he'll give you the tools to work with, but you have to get up off your rusty dusties and make an effort for yourself. And there's an old saying that my grandmother used to say all the time, God helps those who help themselves. And if you're not going to help yourself, there's no point.
He also says that everything has order. So
That's right. Is
necessary. A leader is necessary. But like you said, prayer without works is nothing.
It's dead. Faith without works is dead.
Oh, yes. You know? Let me bring in our panelists for the evening. Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Hey, this is Carlos Ellaby Jones, also known as Stalo J.
All right, Stalo.
Hey,
God bless you, bro.
Hey, everybody. God bless you. Thank you so much. And thank you all so much for this show, man.
All right, you're welcome. One second. We got one more behind you. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Good evening, KD and the panel.
Hey, Alfie,
how are
you? Tariq. Hey. All right, God bless you, bro.
Same here, likewise, mentally felt.
All right, Stalo, you have the mic first, man. Go ahead.
I did want to start and say thank you for bringing this show in particular, you know, into light on this Monday, because, you know, I think one thing that our people, as a people, we need to stop getting confused, because there's a difference between bringing forth true light, mm-hmm. you know, and all the glitz and the glamour and the shimmer of all the false prosperity and only by ourselves will we be delivered. When we look to Jay-Z and we look to all of these icons and things to lead us, we're delusional, because these people don't work for us. Their pocket is lined by somebody with totally different interests, agenda, resources, political strength, and what have you. So we have to appeal, our leaders have to appeal to the building of our people. So leadership is going to equal all of us. Each and every one of us is a leader, and each and every one of us has to equate leading with educating and guiding others and our people. You know, not forcing and compelling people, but educating them. You know,
right.
Always, you know, we need to educate, guide our people by example and by examples, you know. People self-proclaim themselves as leaders, right? However, they imitate the exact same grasping, horrible selfishness, which deprives so many people of rights, and they see, and the things that seize other people's belongings as they're theirs,
mm-hmm.
and they imitate all these things and call themselves a leader because they've accumulated false prosperity, false
right.
wealth. You understand? And all these things, when we are the ones to be leading. the more love we show, the more abundance we will see of help and support we will find from ourselves, looking into our own networks, into our own people. You know, those that refuse to lead or refuse to participate, because either you're going to lead or follow or just not participate. So there are some of us choose not to participate. And those are typically the skeptics. These are the people that are skeptical whether we can do it, whether it's by our own hand that we have done it. And they're the ones that are ridiculous. They're the ones that are imbeciles, the ones that are pretty much more than likely don't have it all together at all. These are the people,
right.
They're skeptical because they don't want to hear the answer. Cognitive dissonance, like someone said a long time ago. But that's what they always have. Every time they are skeptical, they're really answered by all the verses of our struggle. diverse, all you know, anything you look to our history, our achievement, our gracious contributions to this society. And when I say gracious, I mean it because the society hasn't given anything back per se. We've taken everything we've gotten back, you see, and we have taken it. We have taken it. It hasn't been given to us. And, we get caught up in a lot of the rhetoric because we listen to the, you know, leaders, as for leaders of the past. Who are we listening to? We are the leaders of the present, but we're listening to leaders of the past. You know, if you follow the line of inspiration, right, from those leaders and see what moved them and what made them inspire so many people, you'll find out that our success lies in our identification of who we are in the spiritual sense of this globe, in the spiritual sense, though. Now, if you want to bring leaders of the past into it, and we will bring Malcolm, we'll bring Martin, and it's through the inspiration of the fact that we need to identify with who we are. The skeptics can go ahead and stand to the side. If you believe in anything, you see we have accomplished a lot, but it's only been through our own work. We all haven't been working, though. That's why we haven't been gotten so far as we would like. We all haven't worked. Okay?
Let me just interrupt for 1 second, and then I'm going to give out Tariq a shot. You're right. We all haven't been working. But at the same token, speaking now at the absence of our leaders, I'm looking at, I brought up today for part two, specific example of Charles Rangel, okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One of the things now, I get it, the overall situation, the overall punishment, while, understand, if he was involved with something illegal, regardless of what the racial overstanding is, everybody deserves to get punished. The thing is, would he have gotten punished the way that he gotten punished had this been a Caucasian leader? I believe not. I believe we all know this. Here's the deal, though. You know that if you are running from a place or, you know, representing a, let's, for lack of a better word, undesirable bunch, okay? If you know that you have fought through the odds, through the percentages, you know, through the rigmarole, through the obstacles, and you made it. Your job when you get there is not to do a damn thing. Listen, you know, there was a comedian that had made a joke about O.J. Simpson, right, where they said that O.J. got away with murder or got off on the murder trial or got acquitted or whatever, that once that happens, you shouldn't be caught for nothing else. Not for jaywalking, not for sneezing wrong, anything. You should take it as a second chance that you got and be right. My thing is, if you're going in as a black person in a white empowered power seat, okay, of any sort, why would you even entertain the idea of doing something illegal? Why do I say that? A, you're disrespecting your role. You are cheating out the people that count on you or voted you in or believe in you. You are cheating out the people that you represent. So that's all in one. That's many things I just mentioned. It's one thing. Number two, you are under scrutiny. People, from the moment you got accepted, want you out. Why on earth would you give them the satisfaction of having something legitimate to bounce off of? Whether it's blown up out of proportion later on, why on earth would you give them the loophole? Why would you give them the little tear that they could stick their hook into and rip down? That's the next thing. And the third thing, you know, once you get caught up there, if there's even an ounce of validity that they can prove, not only are they going to run you through the mill, but they're going to make sure that whatever it was you brought in gets erased, and you too. Now Charles Rangel is pretty much, he's still in his role. But his role without power is what? His role without power is something you stick on the mantle for them to say, you see, there's a black person in place. But he can't do a damn thing. He can't do anything. Right now, even if he was to sit there and argue in the round table discussions about a situation across the board, they're going to laugh him out of office, pretty much. they're going to laugh at him. Because pretty much you could say what you want, but you're not even valid. Why would you do that to yourself? Jesse Jackson Sr., Mr. Rainbow Push Coalition Man, Mr. I'm Walking with the King, Mr. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But winds up getting into a paternity struggle. What for?
I used to work with them.
What for? How can you possibly be looked at with any type of power, respect, or credence when you are sitting up there doing everything that they are looking for? And understand, when a white politician gets into a scandal like this, all right, even if they're removed from office, their dignity is still preserved by their own. In addition, they get to have some sort of excuse from a humanity standpoint, okay, whereas a black person is on the hook with the moral high ground defense from the other side. No, this is something that's impure and unwholesome, and we can't have this in the state of America. We cannot have the American Constitution being represented with such scandal attached. Meanwhile, they have people over there getting drunk and calling people racist names. They're busy shooting down human beings simply because when they're drunk, they don't like what they see, and the drunk becomes a defense. You have grown white men smacking 18-month-old babies in a plane, saying that he was not only drunk, but he was grieving as well. You have the same white athletes doing the same exact thing, taking steroids and doing whatever, but when one of them admits it, he's honored and celebrated for his honesty and his bravery for coming forth. Meanwhile, anybody else that's not white gets shoved to the furnace. So why would you go in there and deliberately put your foot in the lion's mouth? That's my question. And where on earth do you think that's going to lead the people that you have a basis of being in the position you are to fight for? Where does that leave them now? Al Tariq, you're up.
Yeah, I understand just what you were saying as far as, you know, like these people when they're entrusted, you know, to come through for the people at large. But the way that things are set up, and I hate so bad that, you know, when we at least went from the period of the 40s up to like the 60s where we had started advancing around the nation. But once we gave in to wanting to have the piece of the pie as far as wanting not to do for ourselves anymore and run our own businesses and things like that, and when we start wanting to be a part of the old slave master's plantation, more or less, I think that was where we actually dropped the ball on ourselves, you know, because we had things going on. I've watched things now and seen that we've had, you know, we had neighborhoods that was thriving. You didn't see a bunch of poor people in every neighborhood, just about in the hood, as they say. You know, they had shoes on their feet. They would dress well. They had their own schools, nicely built schools. I mean, all this stuff. But when we started trying to mix in, you know, and the thing that I think about when it comes to that, I'm like, yeah, we have to get along with people. But do you have to actually live around the same way now? It's black people who have lived amongst blacks for so long, and they get to a certain degree in life, they move out. You know, and I look at that, and I'd be like, well, why do we have to move out? You know, if it's not a place that's so much where it's even that much crime, why do we leave out and leave each other behind? Do other people do that? They more or less be together. They stick together. I said, when it comes, we make it to a certain plateau, and the hell with these other Negroes. You know, and
right.
Talk about that. He said the bourgeois Negro, that was a big part of our problem overall, because it's dealing with what Deacon was talking about earlier, and he broke it down just as profound or eloquent as a person want to hear it, as far as the house and the feet of Negro, because the house Negro will always say, which it goes all the way to this day, they'll say, well, what we got, he said, these fine clothes we got here, and we live in a big house, even though it could be a part of your house, but you're working up under those who were the former ones of the big house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's saying, what else I'm going to do is better than what I'm doing right here. When you're not knowing that doing for yourself, it tells you, or the saying that I've always heard from black people of, oh, is God bless the child that has his own. So until we able to have more of our own and be able to put out, or I forget the word right now, but put out where we or dictate, where we can dictate our own destiny, then we will always have other people able to dictate our destinies for us. If we don't stick together, if we don't start pooling our resources, we will continually drop down as a people because we depend on others. We got to depend more on ourselves. And if we keep looking towards government, it's white people that are saying they don't trust government. I'm hearing the radio shows. I'm listening in. And a lot of them trust government. But it seems like we always getting out and we're doing what I had read today. I said, it must be for this show. It said the poor uses please. It says this in scripture. The poor uses please, but the rich answers roughly.
Thank
we always picking up these treaties and these civil rights and this and that and that and that. But guess what? Even after the march, 50 years later, what were they talking about? The same things. So is you that far ahead? What happened we tried now that we tried that could have or had gotten us better results was when we start doing better and working with one another and supporting one another. We told everyone this thing now. Oh, we all got to do this. Everybody's not all doing it for us.
No.
Indeed. And I will say this. There is another panelist trying to come in. I will say this. There was something else that was posted today, and I'm not sure if it was you, Deacon, that had shared the photo, but it said when it's black people, when it's time to march, be like this, and they showed a whole bunch of people with signs and screaming, and then they said, but when it's time for parent-teacher conference, this is what you get, and they showed a bunch of empty seats. Now, that is very true. You know, off the cuff, of course, you get a chuckle out of it because you can relate to the fact that it's the truth. Here's the deal, though. Okay, we all, listen, you said that something very important about 2 seconds ago, Al-Tariq. You said that 50 years later, we're still talking about the same thing. And you know something? I'm not even 50 years old, and I could tell you that I could relate to hearing what I hear now from my generation as something I overheard coming from my parents talking with their friends back in that generation. Here's the deal. We know what's going on. We know. We're not stupid. We can't be blind. You know, you could be blind legally and still know what's going on. The deal is this. You're going to work with people or go to school with people or ride the bus with people that you don't like, that don't agree with you, that wish you were never around. But guess what? Do you stop riding the bus? Do you stop going to work? Do you stop going to school? When the hell does we pick up the ball? And I'm not speaking to everybody because I have learned very quickly, and even the last 3 weeks alone, you're not going to be able to save everybody. Some people are so afraid of change, they will hold on to a rotting chain and will fall with that chain before they let that chain go and be restored.
Yeah.
Okay? So I got that. But for those of us that have children, those children don't know a damn thing, and they count on us till they get older. The last thing that I want to do is to sit there and say, well, it is the way it is. I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah.
No, the best you can is to go with what you know and do something to change it. My thing is, when do we stop talking about what already is known? And when do we stop? I don't know if it was Professor Jones that had said this, but not only him, but a few other people, when I used to get angry about something that I saw and reposted on Facebook, I got told, why are you giving these people more publicity?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you giving racist charges more publicity? And you know what I thought about? I said, here I am, taking this as a way of awareness of talking. And you know something? Something is not just given awareness. Something is actually given secondary iconic publicity to bullcrap. So what do we do? Do we continue to keep feeding their garbage? Or do we do what we have to do silently and amongst ourselves where there's nothing we're giving a little banner for to give attention to what we're doing and just do it? Why do we have to keep saying, you know something, Deacon, you can probably give me the scripture a little bit better, but I know that in the Bible there was something that was said about when he said that instead of you know, when you're fasting, don't try to let people know you're fasting, that you're hungry because you haven't eaten by drawing up your face. Just do it. That's what he values. That's what he blesses.
Right.
When you're doing it and that people don't know, drawing up your face like, oh, what's wrong? Oh, I'm fasting, girl. You know, I'm doing this.
Right.
To bring attention to yourself, that's how we go down. We're
right.
so busy
Those
looking
are the hypocrites.
At them.
Those are the hypocrites.
We are so busy looking at a mountaintop that does not We are so busy looking at what our brother has that's not with us. And something you also said, Al-Tariq, Malcolm X said in one of his speeches where he spoke about how the house Negro used to think in collectiveness with his master. Boss, we doing good today. Yeah, boss, we got a fine house here. Like you said, they associated their own identities with that of their masters. Okay.
Right.
The thing is
no.
that I don't go all the way to the left with the conspiracy stuff, but I do know what truth is and what is in the way. But I will say this, even if that wasn't the case, even if it was just another group who didn't like a group and they were trying to bring us down, hello, listen, what do you need? What does it take? Do you need to go and talk about what happened to somebody you don't know, only read about in the newspaper, to be angry? You're not angry with the fact that just down the block from you, there's a liquor store by your kid's school, that they just knocked down old buildings that they forced you to live in for 30 years that you've complained about and got no response, and somebody came in and saw, wait a minute, this is good real estate. Let's see how we're going to get these people out. Take you out of the dilapidated condition, build it up to greatness, and want their people to come in and get you out, right? You're not angry about that, and part of that includes a stripping club now that's right by your child's school. They're about to, the government, the white government or white people right now want to sit there and capitalize in on what profits marijuana brings, but yet they've been putting black people in jail for years for selling it for their families. Now you tell me, do you need to read about a story of a person you've never met, okay, that to make you angry about that?
Katie, I believe it was Al-Tariq made a comment about our people, you know, striving to try and get a piece of the pie. You know, that view I have a problem with. Okay, I would like a piece of the pie too, but I don't want a piece of their pie. I want us to come together and we bake our own doggone pie and we distribute it amongst ourselves. And then if there's anything left over, we can help somebody else. But we need to get our own pie and distribute our own pieces of the pie ourselves and not depend on somebody else's. Because they're only going to give us so much what they want us to have. Yep. And then if they see we're getting a little bit too much, they're going to pull the rug from up under our feet.
Right,
especially if they gave it to you. Now, let me ask you something. How many of us want our legacies to be that, we had a house and they gave us a loan and, you know, we paid it back, but, you know, I really died as the class clown.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been the type of person. You remember the song by James Brown, I Don't Want Nobody to Give Me Nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Open up the door, I get it myself.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to have that type of attitude.
Yeah.
Not just the attitude, Deacon. No. We need to have the attitude and the action with it. That's the problem.
Right.
Everybody walks around. Listen, I'm sick and tired. I am tired of hearing talk and hot air. I'm tired of these leaders talking about, yes, this is an outrage. This is not what happens to a white person, but an African-American person. Where the hell were you when this little boy got clocked in the face?
Yeah.
And his iPod stolen, and his perpetrator,
mm-hmm.
who was arrested 60 times, released the 61st time.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Yeah.
Where was Al Sharpton with his many cameras?
And I'm going to tell you
the girl in Rochester. Did you hear about that one? The little girl in Rochester a few years ago, where over a Frederick Douglass essay, she did it so good and said how the teachers need to be teachers, and they needed to learn. And she said that they ostracized her. 3 years later, I was watching on YouTube. She said it still bothers her. because she said the same teachers who said she was gifted, they start saying she was the angry black child. And she was not angry. That's true.
If you are a black kid in America, you better be angry. You better be angry. Where is the outrage about this group of teachers that were just exposed on the news for calling their black students poison?
Well,
for calling this black child a poisonous student.
Hmm.
Where was that? Where was the fact that there wasn't any politicians or even local community councilmen walking into that school to get to the bottom of it? Where she had to go onto a YouTube, to take to YouTube and to take to social media to tell her story so that more Facebook activists can get up there and talk about, this is just outrageous. I would be whipping somebody's ass. I'd be doing this. Where are you? Where are you? Maybe you should keep your Johnson zipped up and out of fraternity scandals. Maybe you should keep your grubby little hands in your pockets and take the money that you're making being a congressman. Maybe you should stop trying to look at the TV ministries and actually be a minister.
Yeah.
Maybe you should stop being involved with missing doctors and other people and things to that effect, giving HIV to your constituents and doing the job you were put in to do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could stop giving the black-faced audience out there something to laugh about. Maybe we could stop being punchlines for a change.
Yeah.
I work at a facility where I see a bunch of people, and to hear the stupid little racist comments that come out their mouth when they're under the intoxication of alcohol, and it's all about what they stereotype each race to be. Okay, a couple of you have heard me speak at the comments where I'm hearing these men when they're drunk and they're walking up when you're serving them something and they're telling you things like, do you like to kiss? You know something? I'm a white boy. I don't have big black cocks like the other guys do, like you black guys do. But white guys eat and black guys don't. You see the garbage that's coming out of people's mouths? What is anybody outraged about that?
Huh? Look, this stuff is filthy.
Tommy Sotomayor is another example of a leader by media, because media gave him that, because people who are sitting back there trying to, celebrate their garbage as a leader for them, where on earth is he taking his media mask and saying, this is the issue that I want to address, without putting the hatred onto us and giving them the puppet strings once again to control yet another dummy?
Yeah, because that's just what he is, a puppet. He doesn't realize that his strings are being pulled.
There was a panelist trying to come in. Let me bring them in. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air? Okay. Gentlemen, I need to take a break. When I get back, I will be continuing this discussion, and there will be a question posed to all of you. Okay?
Okay?
Ladies and gentlemen, I will be going out with Quincy Jones in the Secret Garden. When I get back with the word from our sponsors, this discussion will continue. Be back in a few.
All right.
Tell me a secret. Got the secret key to you, babe.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Tonight's episode is sponsored by Professor Carl Tone Jones and his What About Us project. Thank you, Professor, for your sponsorship. We are going to get back into our discussion tonight. This is part two of Black Leaders, Wherefore Art Thou? We are just touching on the absence of our black leaders in times of crisis, in times of need, in times of despair for the African-American communities. Our panelists are being rejoined in as we speak, so just bear with me, listeners. Deacon, are you back?
Yes, I am.
Okay, one second. Stalo?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. And Al-Tariq, are you with me?
Yeah.
All right. Gentlemen, I'm going to start with you, Deacon. Do you feel that, what do you feel, I should say, is the reasons or what has caused our black leadership to go down into such a diluted manner and ways? Do you feel it is simply the, let me say this, putting aside what we already know is the master plan, okay, from the outsiders, I'm speaking about our own accountability to certain things. Do you believe that black leaders got to a diluted state because self-greed, they got caught up with pressures, mainly, or they got into the position for reasons other than what it really was designed for? Starting with you, Deacon.
Well, I can say of all of the above which you mentioned, and I believe the most serious part is that a lot of them have gotten comfortable in the position that they're in right now and don't realize that when you're dealing with life, period, you're supposed to go to different levels, and those levels are not supposed to drop. They're supposed to take you higher. And those levels are supposed to go upward, and that upward motion is supposed to be endless. It's never supposed to stop.
Right.
You know, we're supposed to get to a point where sky's the limit, to where there's no end. So that's where some have gotten. They've gotten to a certain level, and they're just comfortable there, and they just want to sit there. But they have to open up their eyes and realize, no, there's more. There's so much more. If that was the case when Malcolm and Martin were still alive, that's where we would still be. And they had intended for us to get higher than where we are today. I mean, come on. I mean, they have to be turning over in their graves to see the way that our people are heading now, because they gave us a foundation, and we were supposed to build on that foundation. And then after we build on the foundation, then we're supposed to leave something behind for the others that follow behind us to build on. That's why you can't just settle at one level. You got to keep building levels.
Absolutely. Stalo, I'm going to pose the same question to you.
You know what? I like something that you said earlier, Katie. And I think the reason our black, you know, quote-unquote leadership has declined is because something you said earlier, a lot of people have gotten off the bus, right? And the bus has been going, and the bus is going, and the bus, you know, we've all been doing this thing called being black in America. We've all been doing this thing, okay? We've all been part of this mission, and, you know, no matter, you know, even the house Negro is a Negro nonetheless, quote-unquote, so-called Negro. You know, at the end of the day, we all have a collective something that unifies us, whether we like it or not. You know, it's a lot of people getting off the bus, you know, and they need to change their mindset. Many people have been deterred from riding with us, you know. They want to jump off the bus onto classism, onto feminism, onto capitalism. They want to romanticize their differences so they can go on an ego trip here and there. And, you know, we have everybody's a victim of, you know, a perverted mindset, and these perverted mindsets that we are under the influence of here. But we need to ride together on the bus, you see. And it's so funny. When you look at this, you know, there's a lot of people in our leadership that's scared, and a lot of people are scared. They're scared to be black or do anything black. You know what I mean? They scared to, you know, they it's like the skeptics who read about COINTELPRO and research and find out all of this stuff, and they find it so fascinating, but they all of a sudden they don't take it as, oh,
they don't get mad. Like you said, Katie, they don't get mad, but rather they get scared. They're like, oh, anybody who wants to talk about being black or doing this, they're nervous, they're paranoid, they think they're going to get killed if they ever took a stand for their people. So selfishly, they don't want to take a stand for anything, you know what I mean? So it's like, and if you read all them COINTELPRO papers, what you hear? References to the Black Messiah and this and that, you know. And, you know, for those of us who are believers, for those of us who do believe and read the holy books and understand certain things, okay, if we have a scripture, can't Satan have a scripture too?
Yeah, you do.
So if that's the case, a written scripture, so maybe these COINTELPRO papers we're looking at, maybe this is revealing something to us. This is their plan. But when you put the two up against each other, like, you know, the scripture we know of and that, what you think going to win? So there's nothing to really worry. I'm not worried. There's going to be it's not a matter if we're going to make it. It's who's going to go along with us. Are you going to ride on the bus or not? You know, because a lot of people want to get off. You know,
I thought of go over to the next one because we're going to be winding down very soon. Tamik, state your point, and I have two other panelists coming in.
Okay, yeah. The thing is that a lot of times throughout history, you know, and if you just want to use, you know, the books as a reference, all throughout the oppression has went on. There's been wicked systems going on for hundreds and thousands of years now. You know, and within the system, the way that it was placed, it's always been a military-type thing going on, you know. And what they do is you get your certain people in position, and then the ones who you're going against, the best tactic that you use is to show them your strength and what you can do, and then you get the best of the ones who you're really preying on to ride with you. So that's a lot of us are not riding, because we're riding with who we see as the winner. But that's really just an illusion or an image, a false image for the most part, that's real for the time being. You know, and what I like something that Bruce Lee said in Into the Dragon. He said, destroy the image and you will, you know, destroy your enemy. You know, and thing is, the images that we see and that's played to us and everything we see lean towards, you know, those who really run things. Nobody wants to be a loser. So since we've been downtrodden by people for so long, we begin to think that they're the only winner. And once you see them as being the only winners, even if it's not right, you want to be a winner, so you go on and get with the side of the ones who cheat and to win.
That's right.
And that's my thing, though. That's my thing. I believe that that's our problem. Listen, I understand. Believe me, it may not be from a classism angle, but I equate that to being a victim of abuse, okay? If all you know, and panelists, thank you for waiting. I'm going to bring you in right in a few. I say this, if all you know is the life that you have and it includes being abused, okay, you're not going to be so willing to open up your own jail cell door and walk out because you don't know what's on the other side, okay? But if all you know is abuse, but you know that you don't like the abuse, and something does come along that sort of keeps you safe in a sense of the word, but gives you that out you've been looking for, okay, you'll eventually want to take it. Usually we get to the point where some major thing has to happen and scare you into doing something different. Okay, I'm going to once again use the abuse situation to clarify. Sometimes you could be beat up by your partner for days and days on end. You can't stand it, but once you wipe up the bruises and you got the swelling down and you've done whatever you can do, you stick around with it, but your mind starts to go somewhere else. You start to escape from this physical situation. But then one day you really start to go, I really want to get out of here, but it is what it is. Who's going to want me? Who's going to want me with my situation? Who's going to take me with my kids? Who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? But one day that person comes after you with a gun, and you escape that gunshot. And that's what scares you into going, this I can't take no more, no matter what I have to face when I go out there. No matter what the unknown is, I know I'd rather take the unknown than take this. Okay, our problem is, and when I made the reference to riding on the bus with people you don't like, it wasn't about us with each other so much. It's about us as a people who are always living on the, it is what it is. We're never going to get anywhere. Anything we do, they're going to try to shut down. That's exactly what Malcolm and Martin did. They knew that people were going to try to shut them down. They were in the face of it. They were in the face of it. But they got up and they did what they needed to do anyway, because they knew that the problem overrode the problem from the outsiders. Yes. And the problem with us, I'm not asking you to get up and go march, you know, in some big field in the middle of white America. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, are you mad about your children being left back unfairly? Are you mad about the fact that there's a liquor store on the corner of your block that you can go out there and protest against? Why do we have to wait to be reactionary than be seen on TV as part of a Million Man March, rather than be up in your kid's school and wonder why the teacher is calling your child a poisonous child? This is what I'm talking about. These little things that are in your control and cost nobody nothing. But it's the voice. Let me bring in our panelists here. Thank you for waiting, and welcome to the show, caller.
Hey, it's Professor Carl Jones from Philly.
Hey, hold on.
Hey.
There's one behind you.
All right. God bless you, Professor.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Hakeem.
Hey, Hakeem. Okay, you're there.
Hey, what's up, Hakeem? God bless you.
How you?
Same.
All right, Professor. Thank you for waiting, both of you. And, Professor, you have the mic.
All right. Now, I was listening to a lot of what was said, and, a lot of bases were covered. When you talk about our history in this country, a lot of our black leadership has been co-opted. So it's never truly been in the interest of serving the black community. Now, you look back to the Reconstruction era, and during the Reconstruction era, white America saw something that it was not particularly happy with. It saw the fact that all of these skilled laborers who were on the plantations were now out there utilizing these skills to acquire wealth, to build communities, to build schools, and learning became literate at a faster rate than any other civilization in history over a 50-year period, you know, from 1850 to 1900. So there was a situation where they had the black problem. Now, we all hear about the Compromise of 1877. The Compromise of 1877 basically was a backdoor deal betrayal between the American government and the Ku Klux Klan in order to remove and to stop protecting the blacks who have earned their freedom after the Civil War and all this, that, and the other, and I say earned their freedom lightly because they shouldn't have been enslaved, but, you know, who were free, free blacks who were acquiring all this wealth and so forth and building hundreds, if not thousands, of communities all over this country, they took the military out of these southern states and allowed for the Ku Klux Klan to raise and rain hell in every particular town, burning, killing, raping, and rampaging all of these communities until eventually these blacks decided to move up north. Now, what you also had was you got to look at the full spectrum dominance in terms of how the dominant white society addresses its issues. So not only did they use acts of terror, domestic terrorism with the Klan, they also co-opted our leader, people who they propelled and placed in leadership positions. I'm talking about your W.E.B. Du Boises. I'm talking about your Roy Wilkins. I'm talking about the NAACP, the creation of the NAACP, which was created to co-opt and to keep blacks from continuing in segregated communities. See, when you move towards when you move towards the desegregation movement, was not a movement that was popular in the black community. It wasn't a movement that was popular in the black community. The desegregation movement was popular with specific groups. We're talking the Black Boule, which was created in 1906 here in Philadelphia. We're talking the Boule societies who utilized the psychological manipulation of the talented tenth philosophy, where they stated that the 10% will lead to 90%. So they would go on, and they would use their funded, their Rockefeller funded, you know, their Rothschild funded pushes to create and generate movements to persuade blacks to become more integrated with the dominant white society. Until then, you had black communities that were doing way better than the dominant white societies in many different areas throughout this country. But the problem was the white community was not cashing in off of it. They weren't cashing in off the talents of the black community. So therefore, they had developed a system through by co-opting our leadership, pulling people in that were partially corrupted. You know, we talk about Dr. King, and then people will point out, well, Dr. King had an issue with women. Well, see, here's why that's an important thing to discuss. That's an important thing to discuss because Dr. King being at the forefront of a movement where he is representing the black community now can be manipulated by the power structure. And Dr. King for a long time was manipulated by the Kennedy group. You know, John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, they manipulated a lot of black movements that were led by Dr. King because they had dirt on him. They had blackmail on him. So they were able to manipulate him through that fashion, and it wasn't until the Kennedys were assassinated that Dr. King went out and began to speak about pro-black issues, black nationalism, pan-Africanism. And then that's when he became a liability to the movement. But ever since then, you'll notice all of our black leaders, some way, somehow, speak loud and speak a lot of rhetoric in terms of the community, in terms of where we're going as a community, but there's very little action in regards to that. So then what you do is you have to follow the money. Where is the money coming from? Why are these so-called black leaders getting money, getting sponsorships, getting television shows, getting programs like Operation Push or Rainbow Coalition, things of that nature? Where's the money coming from to fund these organizations? And then you'll find out exactly where the priorities of these so-called leaders reside. So when you have black leaders who decide, once they get up in the power structure, that they're going to try to commit to change and force some change for the betterment of the black community, all of the dirt comes out. All of the things come out. What happened with President Barack Obama? As soon as he got in office, all of a sudden, as soon as Obama started to say things that weren't popular, do things that weren't popular, you had the birth certificate scandal. You know, you had you know, all the secret society scandals. You had all the different black men. Then, you know, his links and ties with the Bilderberg group came abroad. See, all these different things came about because he was not following their program. And he wasn't following their program to the crossing the T's and dotting the I's the way they wanted them to. So all these different things would come out. You even had Jewish newspapers in Atlanta talking about the need to assassinate President Obama because he didn't support the Jewish occupation over in Israel. Now, what kind of BS is that? You know, back in the day when you would say something about a president on the phone, the Secret Service would be knocking at your door. But now you can publish this type of stuff in the newspaper. And see, this is what's happening with our community and the dominant white society. And it's getting more and more bold. You know, I pointed out something earlier, and then I'm going to jump off the mic. I pointed out something earlier. There were two wretched stories that have been transpired through the news this week. One was a story where a group of young blacks conspired and committed a home invasion in which they committed some heinous acts. And for that, the book should be thrown at them. There's no disputing that because what they did was wrong. What they did was it was inhumane, what they did to that married couple. You also had another story where you had two white girls who were torturing an autistic child.
Now, unfortunately, an autistic child, they pushed their autistic child out onto a frozen pond, and the autistic child fell in. They thought it was funny. They were video recording it. So let's talk about the commentary in regards to both of those situations. You know, the commentary from the Diamond and White Society, based on when in discussion of the two white girls, were about how those individuals committed acts of evil, how those individuals need to be punished. Now, when you switch the dynamic and you talk about what happened with the incident with the young blacks, then it was about that's why they all need to be killed. That's why I hate niggers. You know, that's why people like Zimmerman get off. That's why we need to continue to kill them on sight, because this is how they act. They attach this heinous act to the group as a whole, and that is the difference in thinking when it comes to them and when it comes to us. So whenever there's an issue concerning of the racial dynamics in this country, as long as we continue to fester, as long as we continue to try to fit into that slipper, that shoe of the dominant white society, unless we play our part, unless we play our role, unless we say no sir, yes sir, ma'am sir, there will always be a point to which we can go. And then we can't go beyond. That glass ceiling exists. And when you tap on that glass ceiling, you get exposed, because the dirt they get away with is not, we don't have that same luxury.
You got that right.
I agree with you 100% on that one, Professor. And I wanted to ask you, I wanted to touch on something you said first, and then I was going to ask you a question. And then Akeem, I will give you the mic. We spoke about this before, and the article you're referring to with the couple, you know, I posted that. And one of the things that I will say is this. I brought up the fact that Tommy Sotomayor, in his spewed garbage about single moms being the reason for homosexuality, he, too, put the blame on the whole of a part of the black race. He put homosexuality on a whole to be blamed on black moms. Now, that's no different from what you just mentioned and what, yes, I did see the comments under the article with the home invasion. And, yes, indeed, the first thing that I saw there was, that's why the Sandra Brown law and Zimmerman get off. That's why niggers act the way they do. I hate this. Yes, I saw that. All right? I didn't see the autistic child in the pool post, and I hope that you'll connect me to the link after the show. But I will say that. But let me ask you something. Considering you study all of this and you teach this, do you believe that the leaders, the black leaders in office are, A, allowed by them, quote, unquote, and do you think that they specifically pick somebody that they know is going to have something that later on will become a smear campaign when they get too far beyond their allowed scope? Do you believe that's what the situation is?
Absolutely. Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. A person like me will never, ever, ever ascend to anything more than a local office if I ever chose to dabble into politics. And the reason is because I am not compromising. I'm not compromising my views. I'm not compromising my ideals. Now, what you have is you mentioned Tommy Sotomayor, you know, and I watch Tommy from time to time, and every once in a while he'll say something that's relevant, but for the rest of the time it's a shock and smear campaign against black people. And the reason, what you have to ask yourself is, this man is making a living off of YouTube. Who in the hell can make a living off of YouTube unless you're getting some additional funding? You know, so who is funding his operation? And that goes back to what we were talking about when it comes to the bank situation. And, you know, people run and control revolutions, or they run and control leadership from behind closed doors. It's about who signs those checks. Because if that person, best you believe, today or tomorrow, if Tommy Sotomayor decided to be a Pan-Africanist, if Tommy Sotomayor spoke openly and vividly against the system of white supremacy, and I give him credit on some things he actually does, but not the majority of the time. So if he actually did these things on a consistent basis, Tommy Sotomayor, with his, first of all, his YouTube numbers, his statistics will be manipulated like mine are, and his he will not get the promotion that he gets currently right now. So, you know, it's all about co-opting and corrupting. See, you know, I think Stalo brought it up, the COINTELPRO papers. You know, we need to – there's certain documents that are a must, that are a must for us to learn and to teach our children. You know, that goes back to the whole thing about us having one single solitary charismatic black leader. You know, when you look and read the COINTELPRO papers, you'll understand they are prepared for that moment. So either that potential person is going to suffer a horrible death from food poisoning, a car accident, or whatever, if they can't corrupt them or co-opt them. Because they know, as a community, we are still dealing with post-traumatic slave syndrome, and we will not support our own initiatives without their permission. Unfortunately, that's the current state of the black community. So they know as long as we have people that aspire to be leaders, they know that eventually that well is going to run dry. I mean, you look at Dr. Ben. He's right now up in an old folks' home in somewhere in New York. This guy, this gentleman is the person that all of the so-called, you know, Pan-Africanists, all the so-called Moors that are looking up to and have studied that by him. He's not receiving any funding for them to maintain to live on his own. He is in subsidized living right now. You know, we don't support our own. So until we get to the point where we are supporting our own so we can develop those systems, then our leaders will always be up for the highest bidder. And when they get that money, it changes the whole landscape of how they choose to lead for us.
Well, they can't kill us all off because then who will they have to work the fields when they try to take us over? I will say that. I will say something else. We have, and Hakeem, thank you for patiently waiting. You'll be up right now. We have this thing where we have to get to the point of, one second, of realizing that we have the power to empower ourselves, the same way the Indians do, the same way, well, I'm going to say the Native Americans do, the same way other cultures do, the same way the Jewish community does. We do have one that's out now, and if we can learn from that, we might have a chance. The Muslim organization does it all the time. Nation of Islam, right here in all of America, you know, is out there, prominent. They have a way that they do things. They empower themselves. They support each other. They build for each other. One of the things that I do know the Jewish community does, having worked with them, worked for them, is this. They don't turn down anything that they can get done for free. They don't turn down sparing or saving the brand name option while they're working their way up. And if they buy old buildings, they build it up so that they can build another Jewish community beacon, be it apartment buildings for Jewish people coming over that don't have the money to deal with high rent or whatever the case is. They build houses. They build apartment buildings. They build centers. And if you go out in certain parts, at least in New York, I could tell you right now, you'll see the mosques from the Muslim community. You will see certain businesses that are owned by the Muslim community. You will see schools that are for the Muslim children.
Well, Katie, can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, you can add something, and then Hakeem, I need to give Hakeem the mic.
Listen, all those things you just said, where it's true, and there's no denying any of it. And the issue is, when you talk about, you know, our brothers in the Muslim community, when you talk about, you know, our brothers in other communities, and you talk about how other communities handle things, they put the race first, culture first. Then they talk about the religion. When you try to get a Christian and a Muslim in the same room to handle some business, down here in Philadelphia, people probably know Gamble and Huff. They were famous music producers. They produced Philadelphia Sound and was a big part of the R&B movement here between the 70s till the late 80s. Right now, Kenny Gamble has an organization, a Muslim-backed organization here in Philadelphia. He will not invest in any business whatsoever if it's not led by the Muslim coalition here in Philadelphia. That's the stuff I'm talking about when I say we don't work together. We put everything else first before we put our nationhood first, and that is one of the things that are killing that's killing all, any progress that we make. So I'm you know, I've said that you know, you can get.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you know what, Professor, with what you do, with what Deacon does, with what Stalo does, with what Hakeem does, with what Al-Tariq does, with what I do, maybe it's time that maybe that should be our first point of teaching. It's teaching them about togetherness. And I'm not speaking on the Kumbaya, you know, flowery fields, Woodstock days. I'm speaking about speaking from some sort of, I don't know, tangible understanding and connection to them. Maybe that's what it is, the importance of supporting your own. I know they've heard it. I know they've heard it. But maybe they've heard it too much from a preach-to-you type situation. Maybe if we can give them some semantics, some economic backup, some understanding, some correlation down the line that they can truly and simply understand.
But they
maybe
haven't
that
heard.
That will start. I'm sorry.
But I was just saying that they haven't heard it, and they need to hear it. There needs to be some type of solidarity that we need to instill in our kids, and we don't need to be ashamed to do it. That's the problem.
I'm saying, Stalo, that we have got to take out the political overtone of it. We've got to take out the preachy overtone of it. I'm saying we got to take it off the news area. We've got to speak to them on their level. We have got to speak to them from a community standpoint, a community, single homes community. Make it appear to them how it directly affects their backyard. That's what I'm saying. I'm not speaking about us talking from a Martin Luther King standpoint, because I believe everybody just puts that into the fact that Martin is a big name. Malcolm was a big name. Malcolm had power. Martin was great. Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, all of these people. No. Let's take that off and let's just start talking like Al Tariq and Katie and Deacon and Stalo and Professor. All of us have something within our grasp that's just enough people to make that next step. And no, we're not trying to outdo any of the oppressors. If that's the case, let them think what they want, because they live on a base of fear and ignorance anyway. And like I said to those of you listening, if the shoes don't fit, don't put your feet in them. Because I'm not referring to those of you that's doing something great. I'm speaking to those that live in the horrors of hatred, who think like a mob that has to take down one person with eight people, who are considered dragging a person to their death by tying them to the back of a damn pickup truck and dragging them for a mile around the road. And I'm talking about the ignorant people who's in law enforcement who allows that to happen and think of excuses to let them off. Now I'm going to go to you, Hakeem, because you've been waiting patiently in the corner, and I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. It feels like I'm in the presence of greatness and giants, so it's a nice table to sit at.
Thank you, sir.
I really appreciate what you're saying, KD, about how we get that message to our youth. And to me, that's really important. And I think you touched on a few ways that it can actually be done. First, I want to just commend the professor, Carl Tone Jones, for sponsoring tonight's talk. I really appreciate that, because you're bringing it to us live. But, you know, that to me, that,
much
those
obliged,
are the...
Brother, much obliged.
Oh, no doubt. I think those are the steps that we have to take, and that we can take that. It may seem like a little bit, but it actually has ramifications down the road that you can only hope to see. And if you look behind you and see the giants, those giants took small steps the same way.
and we're still feeling the ramifications of those. I like to look at solutions. And after last week's show, I was thinking, like, how, like, right now it seems like a dire situation where there's no answers. But I feel like the answers are already here. I feel like it already has changed. I know that anybody who has to go that far out of their way to disrupt my life or to disrupt our whole people's lives, they really don't have it all together. Because to me, if you're really that powerful, you don't have to fear. You don't have to use fear, because love actually lasts longer. And I know that if you're fighting with God on your side, you have thousands of angels next to you looking left and right, where you really do not have a, you know, there is no chance that the devil's going to win. This is not an equal fight. You know, this is just a challenge. This is a place where we have to show our worth, to show that in adversity we still look to God. And that is the whole thing. When it looks dire and there's no choice, there is a choice. There always is a choice. And there always is a way out, because the devil cannot defeat God no matter what he does, and that's not his goal. So I see the solutions as us coming together on, like you said, KD, on small levels, interacting with our families, and I think we have to set up our own think tanks where we have people who are sponsored. They come together and they just put ideas that we take as mandates and we spread it throughout the people who our sphere of influence holds over, and that way we can start to disrupt, because a lot of it is, I think we already have it. They're actually afraid that you will realize that you already have the keys. You have it because you were born with it, but a lot of us don't realize that we have those keys. So no amount of, like, if you just turn off the television or turn off the radio, or, you know, stop looking at these external sources, then you start to see the sources that's in within you, that you were given those blessings before you were born, before everything started. So once we start to look within, it's going to come out, and it's going to multiply so fast that it's nothing that's going to stop it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you said a couple of very, very key things. Very key things. A, the first one I want to, it was the last thing you said, but I want to kind of work back. A, you said we already have it. B, you said we're scared to know we have it. And C, you said solutions. And you know what? Let me tell you this. There are a lot of people that are just as scared of succeeding as they are of failing. And I think that one is a lot more powerful than what the average is, which is people are afraid of not making it. We were born with it. I think one of the solutions, in addition to everything that all of us on this panel have come to or realize or trying to work for, is that we need to worry about building us and mind our damn business. And what I mean by that is this. We tend to try to be like the Joneses. And it's not the Joneses next door to us. It's the Joneses next door to our area, if you know what I mean. They want to be like Miley Cyrus. They want to be like the Real Housewives of Atlanta. They want to be like the person that's sitting in the white seat of the congressional office. They want to be like this. Those things don't belong to us. And most of the things that we have seen are funded by the people that's trying to bring us down. Okay, I believe that we need to work more on 8th Avenue than Saks Fifth Avenue. If I'm getting this to you in an unclear manner, somebody say, you know, clarify, please. I think our problem is, like I said before, we look to storm that mountaintop, and that mountaintop is not in our reach. And because we're trying to knock down the big thing so quickly, we are not dealing with what we have in front of us.
That mountaintop is really an anthill.
You know, if we saw it things the way that we should, Salo, if we focus on the damn things that are important, the stuff that if you don't do something today, literally you're going to wake up tomorrow, and not only is it going to still be there, but it's going to amplify. I think that we're so busy trying to bring them down instead of building us up. It's a problem.
Yes.
When we start looking at something that's an unaccomplishable fate at the moment, all we're going to do is get angry with what it looks like. It's not going to happen. And we're going to start turning on each other even more. And that's the way people who know what our greatness is, even if we don't, okay, bring us down. They wait for us to go. How does it? You guys all read The Trojan Horse, right?
Right.
Hello. Wake up, everybody.
Yeah.
All of you know the story of the Trojan Horse. Did they storm those people in with guns? No. They brought them a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful golden horse. They let them get drunk and fall asleep, and boy, was it over.
Right.
And I'll tell you right now, the Real Housewives of Atlanta, the Maury Povich Show, all of these things that enhance and accentuate the ignorance or the stupidity that some of us tend to have, and make it a profitable business. Okay, that is where we're headed if we don't get it together. If those kids that are going on there talking about, I know he's the baby's daddy because I only slept with one person, but meanwhile they know they slept with 10 guys that week. Okay, and the parents of those children are not going, what are you doing putting your business out on Maury like that?
Right.
That's our first fight. What are we doing not saying anything? What are we doing saying, you know what, Al Sharpton, he's the guy to go out there and heal. They don't want Al Sharpton to come in there. They don't care about Al Sharpton now. He's old, he's dried up, he's silent.
And he works for them already.
And he works for them already. Let me explain this to you. I lived in a shelter, okay? All of you know my story. My children and I lived in a shelter. Literally, when I tell you, directly across the street in Harlem from Al Sharpton's office, from his headquarters, and that man was right across the street from a shelter where nothing but black people were being poured in, taken out of their homes to be put into a shelter where nothing but rats was crawling over their babies. They were being held in prison to a curfew as grown people. Nothing was being done. No food was being given. Whoever was on the system had to pay rent to be homeless. Okay? And then they were playing around with people's files, stealing the clients' forms from their personal confidential files so they could go file taxes with their kids' social security numbers. Where was the outrage on that? Meanwhile, when we all got on our feet and it was time for us to file our own taxes, we were being held into a question or put on delay because somebody already filed for your kids.
What?
Where was the outrage on that? Where was the outrage on the numerous complaints? Where was the outrage on them allowing a pedophile to live in this area, right? Be one of the clients in this shelter with nothing but a bunch of homes and families, because that was a family shelter. And
that's
this
crazy.
Guy was pegged and put in as a pedophile, reported and everything. So you tell me, where were our black leaders and where was the outrage from the families who were around that to say something? That's my problem.
Well, see, Katie, this is...
Go ahead. Who's speaking? Go ahead.
Well, see, this is where the black leaders need to emerge. And the black leaders, you know, this is just me speaking, should have come from that shelter. The black leaders, because it always has to come from the group that's affected. And this is one of the biggest issues with me, is that as a community, we continue to suffer and suffer and suffer, and we've been doctrinized to wait for that savior, that hero, that we've been instructed that suffering is part of our existence here on earth so that we can get into heaven. And while we're sitting here suffering, we're conditioned, unfortunately, as a people. Now, like Hakeem said, we hold the keys to our own salvation. But see,
already.
we have all of the tools that we need to turn this our epidemic around tomorrow. But we have to wake up. We have to make people believe. And that's where we have to take it one step at a time and see. What I don't want to talk too much about is that we have a think tank going on here in Philly right now that we're working on. I'm not going to say too much about it on the air, but if anybody wants to get in touch with me, inbox me, we'll dialogue. But we're actually addressing some of these issues as we speak in Philly right here. And I'm not going to speak too much on it. We have the blueprint for our think tank and everything going along, and we're getting it together so that we can ground running. But we are all already planning for the takeover.
Okay. And definitely we will be in touch, our team. We will definitely be in touch. Because we on this panel know, and people that we speak to know. And even if they aren't just Facebook activists, the ones that are busy beefing about it, they know. The problem is there's people who know, and there's people who know and refuse to stand for it. There's people that we know that know, and if they're upset, just don't know which way to go. The point is, we need to start taking into consideration the power of the small, the power of the little bit, the power of what's in my control. And instead of saying what's in my backyard and not in my backyard, we need to say let's control what's in my backyard so we can teach others to do the same with theirs. And one of the things that I will say, and I don't know if any of you will remember, but there was a couple of panelists on here, okay, a couple of times when we've had this conversation, where they spoke about how they themselves are upset with the issues we're discussing. They're in it, but however, they've managed to be a little bit above the fray, and they've got goals in a different direction. But somehow, some way, I'm not getting the feeling that with their newfound success or their way of thinking or whatever it is that made them better, they're willing to share that with the community around them.
It's hard to share with you if people's minds are not ready for it. Because when you do, then it just turns into hot water being thrown in their face.
You know what? There are people. How many of you know how children work? Your teens grow up as respectful as you have raised them. You're going to get that point where teen rebellion comes in. I don't give a damn how strong of a parent you are. I don't care if there's a two-parent home. Children have a way when they hit the teens and that cross between I've got hair on my chest and I'm a little bit older and my voice is deeper now and I'm taller than my mother and I'm doing this, that's going to hit them where they're on the cuff of being too grown to be a kid but too young to be an adult, but they want to be independent but they still need mommy and daddy, and they roll their eyes and suck their teeth or huff and puff or say you're embarrassing them, but you think they're not listening, and they're listening very well, because when it comes down the time to prove exactly what they heard, they actually act it out when they're someplace away from you. So
right.
My thing is, there are plenty of people out there that are not trying to embrace you based on what you're saying. It's not because they don't like what you're saying. It's because they know damn well what you're saying is the truth, and they're not doing their part, or they don't feel they can. So your job is to not push it on them, but your job is to constantly let them hear it, because eventually they're going to get tired of what they're doing or what's happening, and they're going to come back and go, I remember you said something that was X, Y, and Z. How do I do that? You can't embrace the whole world, because right away nobody's going to do anything, but there will be that one or two that listen. Your job as the person who knows is to keep it moving, is to keep it going.
Yep.
We know what the deal is. Courts don't like us. The government doesn't like us. The first thing they do when they're trying to save their yacht club is cut a welfare fund or cut a poor people's fund. We're not trying to believe that they have our backs. They're not embracing us.
Well, we have to start realizing, like, to me, if you're looking at a solution, you're looking for a solution, sometimes you look at it one way and it doesn't really make sense. So you flip the paper around, look at it a different way. And when I look at this challenge in a different way, I say, well, Okay, you just said they don't like us and they're not trying to keep our programs. But what if they actually worked for us? If you get on the other side of the table instead of having somebody across the table from you, get on the same side of the table and look at it from their perspective in order to see how you should proceed. And what if they actually work for you? What if they are our representatives? What does that mean? Because I don't think that the challenge lies in changing anyone. The challenge lies in changing myself. Because if my perceptions change and I get a broader view of the whole situation, then I am out of the situation just by that action. Because I chose to step around and take a look from another perspective. And I don't think that anyone's against us. I think that they're against us if we agree to it. If somebody gives you a gift and you don't accept it, whose gift is it? It's still the person who's trying to give it to you.
I see what you're saying.
You just said something that I'm sorry, I don't know who that was. I guess that was Professor Press. I'll give it right back to you. You just said something, Hakeem, that just lent credence to what I was saying. You know this. You know how to do it differently. You know how to appear, how to approach a different situation. Many people don't. Many people don't, especially if they've come from an era where nobody really taught them. They had to learn by survival. And understand survival instincts by no way and no means is strategic planning or strategic thinking. That means that, listen, it's either that thing or me. So how do I get around it? The whole point is a lot of us sit around and go, listen, I know that it can be done. I've done it. I've seen too many people who are not so-called bougie, but it doesn't affect them because they've done it. So what does it mean to hand a little bit more over? Why should I worry about it? I did it. I had to go through it. I struggled like you did.
Fight or flight. Everything in us tells me that from a health standpoint, we're in fight or flight all the time. If you have an elevated blood pressure, you're in fight or flight. You don't know it, but you're being attacked. Your body knows you're being attacked, but you're not cognizant of it, like a frog with the heat being turned up slowly. Once we take a deep breath, we have to focus on our breath as the first thing. Focus on our thoughts. Throughout this call and some of the other calls, I hear a running theme about how we aren't this and we aren't that and black people this and black people that. It's more like we're looking at it, but we got to realize that that's our reflection. And in order for that to change, we have to change the way we are thinking, the way we are expressing our feelings. Because that reality is only yours as you accept it. If you look around and see it a different way, it can be a different way. But it has to start at that level. We have to forgive ourselves.
I will say that. You're absolutely right. We do have to take the reins into our own hands and make our own changes. Now, here's the situation. Okay, here's the other part that we need to get. As much as you mentioned earlier that you know that if they have to go through such lengths to destroy your life or the life of a whole people, that means that they're suffering together. But understand that physically the things that they do, okay, is disruptive, is fatal, is dangerous. Physically the things they do out of their not togetherness, out of their separation or the rip or the division in their own scenario causes harm and fatalities to other people. Okay? If I need to be more clear, Trayvon Martin, Jordan Davis. That's just two to name a few.
What if those were not even real?
What if they weren't real?
Orchestrated? If you notice, it was on every channel.
Please expound on that, because there are two sets of parents that are very really and genuinely crying over their lost sons.
If I may comment.
wait, stay low, because I actually cut Professor off, and I want to give him a chance to come back in. You know what, Professor?
No, that wasn't me. That was stay low.
Oh, stay low, then go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, stay low.
No, just what I wanted to say was, there's something you said, Hakeem, really, really draws attention to the fact that we do have a responsibility, like Katie is saying, to teach. We are to be black men. We are to be leaders. We are to assume any of the roles within that spectrum, the spectrum of our people. If we are to assume any of those titles, we have to teach. Because, like you said, a lot of us who are in a constant state of what you said, fight or flight, right? And in that situation, you have elevated, your biology has elevated to certain points where it's no longer necessarily healthy. You've mentioned high blood pressure and all of this. Now, all of that, fight or flight is on a lower, it's a lower. I wasn't talking chakra per se, but what I'm talking is more so a lower consciousness, because that's something that's it's like your heartbeat, okay? It's something you don't think about. That's what I've kind of meant. Now then, like you said, you take a deep breath, and then you realize that it's not. You take a deep breath and realize that you are connected to each and every one of us. And as a black man, you have to teach, okay? You don't have the luxury of saying, you know, most of us love this luxury. Now, to be honest with you, the media, everything as it is portrayed to us, the way that a lot of people will do it, get false prosperity by any means, will tell us otherwise. But we don't have the luxury of saying, forget the rest. Because we're good. We don't have that luxury, okay? Because we assume not right now, not in the state of things, because if you call yourself anything within the titles of what it means to be a black African man, what have you, whatever you want to call it, more, Israelite, whatever touches you, you are a black man and woman. Now that right there, you're not afforded the luxury of saying, I'm good, because we're not good.
I do have to cut this discussion now because we are down to our last 3 minutes. Once again, fellas, you know, I appreciate all that you have brought to the table. I appreciate your constant awareness, your constant contributions, doing all that you can, each and every one of you, in your state. And like it or not, we have the responsibility as people who know and are like-minded to group together and do what we can do. I want the rest of the listeners out there who are facing what you feel to be a hopeless situation to understand that it's hopeless if you look at the big parts that you have to keep trying to get to. You need to deal with what's in your mind. Hakeem, you brought it up rightfully. Start with your health. Start to keep your mind straight. Start seeing things from a different perspective. It is your reflection that you're looking at. So how about changing the man or woman in the mirror? And then change your way of thinking, because that man or woman may or may not have a generation of kids right in front of him that he or she has birthed and created. So that has to be the next step. But it starts small and makes big changes. And the faster you group up them small things, the faster we'll get to the common goal. So until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Thank you all for coming and for what you do. I appreciate you all. So you have a good night, and God bless.
Ashe.
Hey, everybody. All right.
Ashe. Well.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.